Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. This time we're going to be looking at something that might seem, well, a little dry at first. But I promise you, it's anything bitty boring.
Yeah.
We're talking about materials science.
Yeah.
Think about it. A world without steel, without silicon. Heck, even a world without concrete. It's mind-boggling how these building blocks of civilization impact literally everything.
Oh, absolutely. It really is fascinating when you start to think about it. I mean, every advancement, every invention relies on having the right materials. And that's what I love about this month's AGNA newsletter. It lays out this really insightful framework for understanding how materials have shaped history. And even more importantly, how that trajectory can give us clues about the future.
Okay, so this isn't just about geeking out over the periodic table. We're talking about a framework that can help us anticipate which materials will be the game changers of tomorrow.
Exactly. You got it.
Right.
The newsletter makes this key point. It's not just about discovering amazing new materials. It's about whether those materials can overcome five specific hurdles to become widely adopted.
Five hurdles. All right, let's hear them.
Okay, so the first factor is, of course, breakthrough innovation. So does this material offer a serious advantage over what we're already using? Is it stronger, lighter, more efficient? Or does it enable something entirely new?
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing even the coolest, most cutting-edge material isn't going to get very far if we can't actually get enough of it.
You're spot on. And that leads us to the second factor, which is resource availability and supply chain. Is this material readily abundant? Can we access it without major logistical headaches? And are the supply chains stable and reliable?
I see where this is going. A wonder material is useless if it's stuck on a ship somewhere or caught in a trade war. So what's the next hurdle?
All right, so next up, we have economic advantage. Even with a game-changing innovation and a smooth supply chain, if the cost of producing or using the material is just too high, it's going to struggle to gain widespread adoption.
So it's not just about what a material can do. It's about whether we can afford to actually use it. What's hurdle number four?
Okay, this is something we're hearing more and more about these days, and that's geopolitical influence. Is this material subject to political maneuvering monopolies or regional power plays?
Ah, so even if a material ticks all the other boxes, it could still get caught in the crossfire of global politics. And what's the final hurdle?
Last but not least, there's societal and cultural integration. So will people accept and use this material? Are there any regulatory hurdles or ethical concerns that could hinder its adoption?
So we've got innovation, resources, economics, geopolitics, and even social acceptance. It sounds like a material needs to be a real overachiever to make it in this world.
It does. And what's fascinating is that the newsletter uses historical examples to illustrate how these five factors have played out time and time again, shaping civilizations and driving progress.
That's what makes this so cool. We could look back and see how these factors have played out in the past, and that gives us insights into what might happen in the future. So let's talk history. What kind of examples does the newsletter give?
Well, they start with a classic example, the Iron Age. Iron completely revolutionized warfare, agriculture, even architecture. But what's interesting is that iron ore itself is actually quite common.
So why didn't the Iron Age happen sooner?
Well, because it took time for people to figure out how to smelt iron efficiently. Once they did, iron was abundant, relatively easy to process, and offered significant advantages over bronze. The previous wonder material...
It's almost like iron had been waiting in the wings for its moment to shine. So it nailed those first three factors: breakthrough innovation, resource availability, and economic advantage. But what about the geopolitical and social aspects?
Well, iron tools and weapons were rapidly adopted by societies all over the world. And because iron ore was more widely distributed than the tin needed for bronze, it didn't give any single empire a monopoly on power.
So it cleared those hurdles, too.
Yep.
So iron was like the five-tool player of materials.
Okay, what other historical examples did the newsletter cover? Well, they dive into bronze, which, despite its initial advantages over stone tools, ultimately faced a major challenge: the limited availability of tin. You needed tin to alloy with copper to make bronze.
And speaking about bronze, was this revolutionary material, it had a major vulnerability right from the start.
Exactly. The dependence on tin created these choke points in the supply chain. And as history shows us, controlling those choke points often meant controlling empires. But when access to tin was disrupted, empires could crumble. It's a stark reminder that even the most powerful societies can be vulnerable if they rely on limited resources.
That's a chilling parallel to some of the challenges we face today with materials like lithium. It's like history is repeating itself, but with new materials.
It really is. And that brings us to the star of the show right now, lithium. It's the power behind our smartphones, our laptops, and increasingly our electric cars.
It's hard to imagine a world without lithium now, but the Muse letter hints that its future might not be as bright as we think.
Well, the demand for lithium is absolutely skyrocketing. I mean, by 2040, it's predicted to be 9 times higher than it is today. But there's a catch, and it's a big one. China currently controls a huge chunk of the lithium refining process, making it a major geopolitical player.
So even though lithium itself is relatively abundant, the control over its refining creates a potential vulnerability. That's a little unsettling.
It is. Imagine a world where your phone, your laptop, even your car could be held hostage by trade disputes or political tensions. That's the kind of scenario we need to be thinking about.
Okay, so lithium is facing some geopolitical headwinds. But what about cobalt? I feel like I hear about cobalt being in everything these days.
You're right. Cobalt is a critical component in many batteries. But here's where things get really interesting. Despite its importance, cobalt is actually in structural decline.
Wait, what? How can something so essential be in decline?
Well, because it's facing a perfect storm of challenges. First, there are those ethical sourcing concerns. A lot of cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where mining practices are often deeply problematic. And second, we're seeing the emergence of alternative battery chemistries that don't rely on cobalt at all.
So the push for ethical and sustainable technologies is actually driving innovation and changing the materials landscape.
Precisely. And it highlights how all five of those factors we talked about are constantly interacting and shaping the trajectory of materials.
Okay, so we have lithium with geopolitical challenges and cobalt facing a decline. What about nickel and graphite? Aren't those also key ingredients in batteries?
They are, but their future is far from certain. Nickel, which is essential for certain high energy density batteries, might actually see its role in electric vehicles shrink.
Why is that?
Well, because cheaper cobalt-free batteries like LFP batteries are becoming more and more popular, potentially displacing nickel's dominance. And then we have graphite, which is crucial for battery anodes.
Wait, graphite? Isn't that stuff pretty common? Pencils are made of graphite.
It is relatively abundant, but here's the catch. China controls about 78% of global graphite production, and they've been tightening their grip on that supply chain.
So graphite, the seemingly humble material, is another potential choke point.
It could be. Remember those Bronze Age empires that crumbled when their tin supply dried up? Could the same thing happen to our tech-driven world if we don't diversify our sources of critical materials?
That's a sobering thought. We've covered a lot of ground. But we haven't even touched on the other materials in the Muse letter, like uranium and silicon.
We'll definitely get to those. But before we move on, what are your initial thoughts on what we've discussed so far? Anything that surprised you?
I think what's hitting me the hardest is this idea that even materials that seem abundant can become strategic resource almost overnight, due to these complex geopolitical and economic forces.
I think that's a great takeaway. It's a reminder that we can't take any material for granted.
Well, on that note, I am very curious to hear about uranium and silicon, so let's keep going.
You know, it's interesting how we often focus on the shiny new materials, but sometimes the most intriguing stories come from materials that have been around for centuries. The Muse letter touches on a few of these, like aluminum oil and even Roman concrete.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's start with aluminum. I know it's super versatile, lightweight, strong, and it's used in everything from airplanes to soda cans. But wasn't aluminum considered a precious metal at some point?
It was. In the mid-1800s, aluminum was actually more valuable than gold. Napoleon III even had a set of aluminum cutlery for his most esteemed guests, while less important guests had to settle for gold.
Wow, talk about a status symbol. But obviously things changed. What happened?
Well, early production methods for aluminum were incredibly energy intensive and expensive. It wasn't until 1886, with the development of the Hall-Heroult process, that aluminum production became economically viable. This breakthrough innovation unlocked aluminum's potential, leading to its widespread adoption.
So aluminum went from a luxury item to a ubiquitous material in the blink of an eye. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, what about oil? I feel like that's a material that needs no introduction. It's been shaping the world for over a century.
Oil is a fascinating case study because it highlights the interplay of resource availability, economics, and geopolitics. The discovery of vast oil reserves in the late 19th and early 20th centuries transformed transportation industry and even warfare. But it also created new centers of power and led to intense competition for control of these resources.
It's almost like oil has been both a blessing and a curse. It's fueled economic growth, but also contributed to conflicts and environmental concerns.
Exactly. And it underscores the fact that materials are never just about their physical properties. They are deeply intertwined with the social, political, and economic systems of the world.
That's a great point. And it makes me wonder, are we repeating those same patterns with materials like lithium? Are we setting ourselves up for similar challenges in the future?
That's a question worth pondering. The parallels between the oil era and the emerging lithium era are certainly striking. The control over lithium resources and refining capacity could have profound geopolitical implications in the coming decades.
Okay, we've talked about aluminum and oil. What about Roman concrete? I remember reading somewhere that their concrete was incredibly durable, lasting for centuries, but then the secret to making it was lost.
It's true. Roman concrete was a marvel of engineering. Some structures built by the Romans are still standing strong today, over 2,000 years later. Their concrete was able to withstand harsh environments, seawater, and even earthquakes.
So what was their secret? And why was it lost?
Well, Roman concrete was different from modern concrete in a few key ways. They used a volcanic ash called pozzolana, which reacted with seawater to create incredibly strong and durable cement.
So their concrete actually got stronger over time, thanks to exposure to the elements. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
It is. And the fact that their structures have stood the test of time is a testament to their ingenuity. However, as the Roman Empire declined, the knowledge and infrastructure needed to produce this type of concrete were lost. It wasn't until the 18th century that scientists began to rediscover the secrets of Roman concrete.
That's kind of mind-blowing. We think of ourselves as so technologically advanced. But here's an example of a technology that was lost for centuries. It makes you wonder what other knowledge and innovations we might have forgotten or overlooked.
It's a humbling thought, isn't it? And it reinforces the idea that progress isn't always linear. We can learn valuable lessons from the past, even when it comes to material science.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've explored these fascinating historical examples, but let's bring it back to the present. We talked earlier about lithium, cobalt, nickel, and graphite, the materials that are powering our digital world and driving the transition to clean energy. But the Muse letter also mentions uranium and silicon. What's the story there?
Well, uranium is a classic example of a material that has gone through cycles of boom and bust. It was initially sought after for its use in nuclear weapons, but then nuclear energy came along, offering a new and potentially transformative source of power. However, accidents like Chernobyl and Fukushima, coupled with concerns about nuclear waste, led to a decline in nuclear energy's popularity.
So uranium went from being a symbol of power and progress to a source of fear and controversy.
Exactly. But here's where things get interesting. Uranium is experiencing something of a renaissance.
Really? Why is that?
Global energy security concerns, coupled with the urgent need to reduce carbon emissions, have led to a renewed interest in nuclear power. Many countries are now revisiting their nuclear energy policies, seeing it as a potential solution to the climate crisis.
So uranium is staging a comeback, but I'm guessing there are still challenges.
Absolutely. One of the biggest hurdles is the issue of uranium enrichment. Russia currently controls a significant portion of the global uranium enrichment capacity.
So even though nuclear energy is seen as a clean energy source, it's still entangled in geopolitics.
Unfortunately, that's the case. The reliance on Russia for uranium enrichment has raised concerns about energy security and has led to a scramble for alternative sources of enriched uranium.
It seems like no material is immune to these geopolitical dynamics. It's a constant game of chess on a global scale.
It is. And the stakes are only getting higher as we become more reliant on advanced materials for everything from clean energy to cutting-edge technologies.
Okay, so uranium is back in the game, albeit with some geopolitical baggage. What about silicon? It's the material that powers our computers, smartphones, and pretty much everything digital. What challenges is it facing?
Silicon is a fascinating case study because it highlights the intricate link between materials technology and geopolitics. While silicon itself is relatively abundant, the process of turning it into the ultra-pure silicon wafers needed for microchips is incredibly complex and technologically demanding.
So it's not just about digging up silicon out of the ground. It's about mastering the entire manufacturing process.
Exactly. And that's where things get interesting. For decades, the semiconductor industry has been dominated by a handful of countries, with the majority of silicon wafer production concentrated in Taiwan and South Korea.
And with the recent tensions between the U.S. and China, that's become a major geopolitical flashpoint, right?
Absolutely. The U.S. has imposed export controls on semiconductor technologies to China, and there's a big push to reshore silicon wafer production, bringing it back to Western countries.
So the battle for technological supremacy is also a battle for control over the materials that make that technology possible.
Precisely. And it highlights the fact that material science is no longer just a scientific endeavor. It's a strategic imperative, shaping global power dynamics and influencing the future of innovation.
This is also fascinating. I feel like I'm starting to see the world in a whole new light, recognizing the hidden stories behind the materials that make up our everyday lives.
I think that's the beauty of exploring material science. It's a window into the complex interplay of science, technology, economics, and even geopolitics.
It's clear that the materials we rely on are more than just ingredients. They are the building blocks of our civilization, shaping our past, defining our present, and influencing the possibilities for our future.
Well said. And as we look ahead, it's crucial to understand these dynamics so we can make informed decisions about the materials we choose to use, the technologies we develop, and the future we want to create.
Wow, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from the ancient Iron Age to the current silicon showdown. But where do we go from here? What does all this mean for the future?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What's so fascinating is that we're not just passive observers in this material drama. We all have a role to play, whether it's through the choices we make as consumers or the policies we support as citizens.
So we're not just along for the ride. We can actually influence the trajectory of materials and the technologies they enable.
Exactly. By understanding the challenges and opportunities associated with different materials, we can make more informed decisions. We can advocate for responsible sourcing, support innovation in recycling and alternative materials, and make conscious choices about the products we buy and the companies we support.
It's almost like we're all part of this giant interconnected materials ecosystem, and our actions have ripple effects throughout the system.
That's a powerful way to think about it. Every choice we make, from the smartphone we buy to the energy sources we support, sends a signal to the market, influencing the demand for certain materials and shaping the direction of innovation.
That's both empowering and a little daunting. But it also gives me a sense of hope. If we can become more aware of the materials that make up our world, we can start to make choices that align with our values.
I agree. It's about moving beyond a purely consumerist mindset.
Yeah.
And recognizing that we have a collective responsibility to steward these resources wisely.
This whole conversation has been a real eye-opener for me. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on the world around me, seeing the hidden connections between materials, technology, and society.
It's amazing, isn't it? Once you start to see the world through this materials lens, it's hard to unsee it.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with this big question. What's next? What new materials will emerge in the future, and what challenges will they face?
Those are the questions that keep material scientists up at night. As we enter an era of unprecedented technological change, the quest for new materials will only intensify. We'll need materials that can withstand extreme conditions, materials that can store energy more efficiently, materials that can enable entirely new forms of computation and communication.
It sounds like the future of material science is going to be as much about imagination as it is about scientific discovery.
It absolutely is. We need to think outside the box, explore unconventional materials, and challenge the assumptions that have guided us in the past.
And along with that scientific exploration, we also need to consider the ethical and societal implications of these new materials. We need to ensure that they're developed and deployed in a way that benefits humanity as a whole.
That's a crucial point. The future of material science isn't just about creating new materials. It's about creating a better future. It's about using these materials to address global challenges, to build a more sustainable and equitable world.
Though said, this deep dive has been an incredible journey into the fascinating world of material science. I hope our listeners are leaving with a newfound appreciation for the stuff that makes up our world and the complex forces that shape its evolution.
It's been a pleasure diving deep with you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.